Hi, everyone. Welcome to Magical Baddies, the realest podcast on all things mystical, magical, and spiritual. I'm Sophia Horniak.
And I'm Leah Garza.
And we're your hosts.
Yeah.
All right. So this is part deux of Akashic Records, which was like a pretty long episode for us. But I think we just had so much to say. We're so passionate about the work that we do.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I could talk ad nauseum about this. Yeah. And why it's a superior practice to others. No, not really.
But we are we're gonna try to keep this on a normal schedule for all y'all.
Yeah,
all use people that have things to do. So I think this time around we want to talk about more of the practice, our experience with the practice, maybe questions that come up with our students and mentees, and so I feel like one of the biggest questions that we typically get is, do you need a prayer to get into the Akashic Records? Now, I know, like, I was just having this conversation with Leah. A lot of people that are familiar with the Akashic Records, I feel like it's kind of been, like, vesseled by Dr. Linda Howe. I didn't even know who that was until, like, right before I met Helen. So I had no idea about this person. And we were just talking about different books that we have read or different classes that we have taken. And it seems like there's always kind of a route back to Dr. Linda Howe. And I did not have that experience. I learned from my stepmother, or not stepmother, adopted mother. And then through other people, but I didn't really understand. I didn't know about this person. So should we, like, talk about this person and what she kind of dictated around it?
We could, but I want to hear, like, how your mother, like, showed you how to access.
So I remember Millie was like, Sophia, have you ever heard of the Akashic Records? And I was like, no. And she's like, well, it's kind of like a library. Which I would not agree with anymore.
Yeah.
She was like, it's kind of like a library that has, like, all the scrolls that have all of your past, present, future lives in it. That's where you go after you pass. And it's kind of like a touch point. And you make these decisions there, and you come back. Yeah. And I was like, okay. So she was kind of explaining to me, I guess, like, the sense of destiny and the sense of, like, we create our destinies. Mm-hmm. We create everything that we run into. We were the creator of our reality. And I think that's what she was trying to, like, impart on me.
Yeah.
And I remember after we had that conversation, that night we went to bed, and when I woke up, she came back with that long letter from one of the archangels to me. And again, I really wish I still had it, but she said that came from the Akashic Records, and I still didn't really have a concept of it. So she kind of explained it as, like, the more, because I'm like 15 at this point,
yeah,
the more I get in touch with, like, my higher self, the more I meditate, the more I feel myself deeper in this space where I feel spiritual, the more I can connect to the Akashic Records. And I don't think I really understood that until, like, my 30s, to be completely honest, because that's such a vast concept, not only to impart on a 15-year-old, but to kind of put to anyone, right? Because I think, like, now we just want to know, what is the thing? How does it look? What does it hold? And how do we get there? But I think what she was giving me was, like, it's sort of like through the hall of trusting yourself, through the hall of, like, hearing yourself. So she didn't really teach me how to access the records. Mm-hmm. She just taught me, like, you can get to it eventually the more you develop this sense.
Yeah.
And with her, you know, even though that was something that she taught me, with her, more my development was through, like, practices in like root work and Santeria and the tarot. That's kind of more, and even like past life and trance, she she would go like in and out of accents all the time. Which was like really weird and really cool. But anyways, yeah, I she never really taught me. I really didn't revisit the records until my 30s, and I had like an energy session with somebody, and I remember coming out of it and I felt like my hair was like staticky, like I had been like up in the air. And I remember telling this person, like, I saw this being. It was like this goofy, like it looked like Goofy. Like that's the only I was like, you know, those 1930s cartoons. Like I couldn't like really put a finger on it. And she's like, oh, maybe you went to the Akashic Records. And I don't know why that came out of her. It did. And then like the next day I went to Barnes and Noble's, Barnes and Noble's. And I was looking through books and I found this book on the Akashic Records. And for those of us that are listening on the podcast, you're not going to be able to see this, but on YouTube, that's the little being that I saw. So it like led me to the Akashic Records. And that's when I started practicing. So, you know, she didn't really, and this person is not Dr. Linda Hell. This is Maureen J. St. Germain. And even so, it took a while before I really understood the difference between psychic, being a psychic and working in the Akashic Records or the Akasha. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, that's great. So the question of like, do you need a prayer to get to the records, or like, do you have to have a prayer? I mean, like the answer is no, that's one way to get there, but there are many people that have studied this over time that certainly did not use the stuff that we used in our, you know, in this age, this era that we're in. I know that people have talked about using meditation and astral traveling and sound baths or frequencies and prayer for sure. Toning. I'm trying to think of what other ways have you heard?
Yeah. Toning, sound, prayer, meditation, astral travel, dream world, dream work.
Yeah.
Energy work, but essentially when you're deep in energy work, you're meditating, right? So and frankly speaking, if I wanted to get down and deep into it, sound is also an invocation too, right? Yeah. Like your prayer is an intonation.
Yeah.
It's the same as humming, or it's the same as mantra. So it's all of it's an invocation.
Yeah.
If we're, you know, going with semantics.
Yeah, totally. It's so like one of the things that I learned early on or was taught, and this is through the work of Linda Howe, is that it is the Akasha can be known as a dimension of consciousness. Like, yes, it can contain all this stuff, but also it's not a physical place. It's a dimension of consciousness. So like all the things we just listed are methods for inducing a shift in consciousness, going into non-ordinary consciousness. And so I'm sure there are lots of other ways that we don't even know yet that this happens. I guess we could talk about Linda Howe. I feel like we open ourselves up to,
well, we don't have to. I just feel like, you know, for most people that know it as the Akashic Records, they might know it because of Dr. Linda Howe. And even in speaking to, you know, some other psychic mediums that are friends of ours, they're like, I'm not an Akashic Records reader, but like I do Akashic work. And I'm like, well, we all do. And that's why I don't call myself an Akashic Records teacher or practitioner or whatever. I work with the Akasha because it is a dimension of consciousness. And I think that, you know, we can really dive into the idea of like dimensional, like you always see people writing about the fifth dimension, 11th dimension, whatever. And again, we're trying to do this thing where we're like nominating a space or a time or a place as a thing that where things live. But frankly, we don't know what it is.
Right.
And dimensional work lives in our waking work. Our waking life, like the same way that ghosts or spirits exist in our physical world, it's the same thing. So it's not like I'm ascending into like an airplane. It's all, and I think that most people, if they, even if they realize it, don't like know how to articulate that.
My eyes just roll so far back in my head when people talk about ascension. I'm sorry. I have a little attitude today or something.
Everyone has an attitude. It's Aries season.
Oh yeah. And I'm an Aries. So
and I'm an Aries rising. So
here we are.
Let's set the shit on fire. Let's talk about Dr. Linda Howe.
Well, okay. So what I want to say about Linda Howe is that I love her work. She was my first real teacher. I mean, Helen von der Heide, our friend and teacher, was my first real teacher, but she was trained in the tradition, the method of Linda Howe. It is a beautiful, amazing body of work that she has given to the world. And it really set the tone for like a whole shift in my being from believing that I was pathologized, I was broken, the best I can do is just keep my head above water in life, toward a real true understanding of my connection to love. And I know that that came from the work of Linda Howe. As a personal, like, yeah, this is my eighth year doing work in the Akasha, and I would not be who I am or sharing what I share were it not for those strong foundations. That being said, I've certainly had experiences in my practice and in the Akasha that, you know, I've taken classes with Linda directly and asked her about them. And she said, that's not the Akashic records. And so I knew, like, well, I'm having this experience and I can't pretend that that didn't happen. But she's also saying that my experience is not Akashic, but it really feels that way. That's really what pushed me to like start to study or question, like, well, what else is possible in this practice? What else, what else is like, we cannot disavow our own experiences. We just cannot, especially when we do a certain amount, like we do a certain work for years and we, so I don't claim expertise, but I don't think that anyone can be an expert in this really. But I do have, I am experienced. I am studied. I've taken all of her classes. I've taken, you know, I've read all her books. I've read books by other people. So I'm not a newbie at this. So I do know that like my experience is valid. I just had to find a practice or a lineage or an explanation that could hold all of it instead of feeling like what I was experiencing didn't fit into her explanation for the records.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree a lot with all of that. Like, I think her books, I think her classes, if you are a newbie, if you are interested, it is an amazing body of work where she does create a template for things that are hard to articulate.
Yeah. Totally.
And I think that for lots of people, having somebody write something down where you can ground a body of knowledge that can be so esoteric is a feat, you know, it really is.
Totally.
And so I think for somebody like to kick off, you know, masses of practitioners through her work, like you got to give her props and you have to like look at it from the point of view of like, you know, she clearly is here to do something and she's doing it, you know?
Yeah.
I would say for me on a personal level, I had one interaction with her that I did not like, and it was like very small, but it was my body like standing in front of myself going like, this is where it stops. Like, this is it for you. And I think that was the jumping off point for me to explore my own practice now that I had that foundation of knowledge. Yeah. And I think that's what she provides. It's a huge jumping off point for some people. For lots of people, they like boundaries. They like to have rules. They like to have, you know, processes and systems.
Yeah.
If that is what you want, if that is what you like, that is what Dr. Linda Howe is. But for me, especially doing this Akashic work, especially doing a lot of the work that I do, I have to continuously push myself to be expansive and push myself into the spaces of the unknown, whether or not it is scary, whether or not I'm unsure of it, like what you were saying, your experiences are valid. And for me, those experiences in navigating new and old spaces are really important to my practice. I feel like that's really important to those connected to me. And important in me being a human being. And I don't think I could get that in a constrained body of work like that.
Yeah.
And I think that right when I had that reaction of like, no, it was interesting. Cause I think like maybe a month later, Helen was like, hey, I'm putting out this like experimental body of work. You know, I'm picking, you know, X amount of people to be a part of this program. And I campaigned. I was like, I really want to do this. Like I had only taken like maybe two classes with Helen and, we did that and it helped. That was like that second step I needed to like, then like, you know, be able to base jump into like the great unknown. And I think that, She does have a polarizing personality. She does have a polarizing way that she approaches, I think, the Akashic Records, especially when we look at like things like, I mean, you would have to speak on this, but like, you know, colonialism. And I almost feel like she like went in and staked her claim and like, this is the only way and this is how you do it. And you know, in the space that you were saying, like, she was like, no, that's not the Akashic Records. That's very Dr. Linda Howe. But, you know, with every Dr. Linda Howe, there's somebody like Leah or there's somebody like me. So I think that that is just like something that we commonly run into as human beings. And I don't think that that necessarily has a lot to do with the work itself. I think that has a lot to do with the person.
Yeah. I was a rule person. Like when I loved, you know, like I had colleagues and people I knew that had started her work when I started it. And within like a year, they're like, I have my own prayer. They gave me my own pathway. I don't use that anymore. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm sticking with this tried and true method. I don't want to mess with that. I felt like a love. I do still love her so much, but like a love of her work. And like, you know, when you love a teacher and you're like, I want to stay their student. I don't want to diverge. And I really believe that. I love using her prayer. I still use it when I'm reading other people. But in 2020, I was given my own pathway through what the records called an invocation for personal work in the records. And I wrote it down in a notebook. And then I was like, well, I'm not doing that. Like, it was too scary to me because it was basically them, the guidance was go off on your own now, like go with what you know and build. And I was like, no, I'm not ready. It wasn't until I think 2021 that I finally was able to touch it. And like, because part of the invocation, the guidance was like, share this with everyone. You don't own it. You don't copyright it. You share it with everybody. Let anyone use it who wants to use it. That's the job of this invocation. So, I mean, I've like posted it on Instagram for people to just see and use, and there is zero gatekeeping around it. I say that with the caveat of like, don't just take the keys to the car if you've never driven before. You know, like it takes some, this isn't nothing. Just because anyone could study it and try this doesn't mean everyone will have a great experience right off the bat. But separate from that, what I'm saying is like, I was a rule person and I was guided to not be a rule person. I was like, but it took me like a while to feel comfortable with my own authority, with my own, like, I guess, I don't even know what to say, like self-esteem, like I deserve to have a voice in this work too.
Mm-hmm.
And also I need to have a voice in this work because the imperative was also like, you have to start talking about decoloniality in spiritual terms.
Right.
That's your job, Leah. Like that's on earth. That's what you were doing for a period of time. So yeah, it's been a process for me.
Yeah. I do want to touch on the, like, keys in the car thing. So we kind of touched on this question just like between us, like text or whatever. And for me, I always recommend some sort of prayer or invocation in any kind of work that you do, especially if this is, if you still have your learner's permit. And I think that what it does is, you know, through the intonation of your voice, which is, you know, sound is so beyond the intellect and so beyond the words that we actually speak. So whatever that intention is, I think sounding in your voice provides a safe way for you. Not that you necessarily need to be worried about whatever's out there, but if you are worried about what's out there, it's going to find you. And so I think like creating a safe space for you to feel safe in order to trust what you receive is very important. And so that's why, you know, anyone that I have mentored or has taken classes with me, I definitely push for you to use your own prayer or use a prayer that I give or whatever, just to create a safety net as you learn how to, you know, swing from bar to bar. But it doesn't mean you need to access it that way. And one thing that I really want to touch on is that in your work, I think, you know, colonialism, decoloniality, has such a wayward, like, there's such a weird understanding of what it is, what you see on Instagram, what you see on whatever, wherever, you know, we think like colonialism, of course, we think of like
George Washington,
right?
Like a tricorn hat.
I was like pilgrims, but and I don't, and that, you know, I've learned so much from Leah just through friendship, but, you know, what I realize is like, one of the things that I feel that we are connected on is like this sense of like full true freedom, as much as we can have it, regardless of our, or I guess like in recognizing how we are programmed and what our reality is. You know, you can't just like throw it all away and just be like, this doesn't exist. I'm just, you know, so I think it's really important what you do in this work. And I think that, you know, thank God you like figured out you need to break some rules, because I'm like over here, like, that's all I want to do.
I will just be like, I just want to fit in. But then the thing I say is like, get out, Leah. And I'm like, I didn't even like the whole Trump thing on the first time. Like, I don't know. I want to just be a pumpkin spice latte basic, fit in, go with the crowd. Like, you don't even know me.
I want Nas's You Can Hate Me Now to play anytime I enter a room. And I'm just like, I'm just kidding. That is such a part of my personality to joke about that. I think it's so much that it like almost seems real, but I'm like the complete opposite of somewhat until you push me.
It's interesting. So I want to just touch on the keys to the car thing too, because I mean, this is like the crux of my work is like, I keep telling people that I want to dismantle readership. Like I want to get rid of readership. I want my clients to not need me because I want them to be so good and so confident in their own Akashic practice or their own trust in themselves, whether they do Akashic or not, just like trust yourself.
Yeah.
Trust your knowing. Do go with you to use the words of Fiona Apple at the 1996 VMAs or whatever. Go with yourself. But yeah. So like in my Akashic mentorship, which is a year-long container for people to practice working with their own records, their own relationship. We don't train to become readers in this mentorship. There's like a few quotes that I put out and I'm calling them spells. And the first one is from Joyce Carol Oates and it's, I never change. I simply become more myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is the first thing that we need to know about the Akashic work. Like, we can go, I've been through massive changes, but it's only taking me on the path to being more myself. And the more I know myself, the better, more discerning of a practitioner I can become. So like when people come to this and they're like struggling with maybe like self-esteem issues or lack of self-confidence or a lot of like wounds that have like really distorted their perception of their agency or their power. And then they come to this practice and they think, I want something to save me, or I want, well, this is my way out, or, oh, I'm finally going to, you know, find the key to my healing, but they're not maybe addressing those wounds. Then they have the same experience, but in this like quote unquote spiritual domain. So I've had students that I think now looking back, I used to teach like intro to the Akasha workshops that were like 3 hours. And I find that really negligent of myself to have ever done that, because I had students who later came back and were like, oh, a demonic entity has taken possession of me. Or, you know, I think it happened through the Akashic records. And I'm like, oh, you weren't ready for this. That's not what's happening, but you weren't ready for this. I didn't know. I came from this, like, anyone can do it. And yes, anyone can do it, but we have to, I just feel like it's so critical to like have a container or a person or someone that you can come back to and be like, here's my experience. What is this? Or I'm doing this every day. I have a practice. And that's why like part of my mentorship is to, the point is to become devotional, where you like become a regular practitioner of this thing, and not from a place of obligation or I want to fix myself, but from a place of love of the practice, loyalty to the practice. So yeah, I don't think it is. And I've seen people just like, you know, take one intro class and then think, oh, I'm going to teach a certification on how to do the records. Yeah. And like, I would steer so far away from those people.
I agree. I, you know, to paraphrase, I'm going to deeply paraphrase Carl Jung, but you know, his sense of individuation, not individualization, individuation is that we spend our whole lives evolving into who we are.
Yeah.
And I think that that takes so much pressure off of this idea of who we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so when we think of things like self-esteem or trauma or whatever that quote blocks us or hinders us or whatever, and that's just part of who you are, how you show up. So if you come into this or come into any space with the mindset of like, I need to fix something, I need help, like ultimately, like when you have a panic attack, and this is somebody who has a panic disorder, your first thought is somebody save me. But ultimately, you have to save yourself in that predicament. And so if we look at life as a panic attack and we look at it as like, I have to save myself, what are you saving yourself from? Because these things are a part of who you are. Now you have to learn how to live with it or evolve with it or et cetera. And so I do agree with Leah to the levels, like, I really want people to trust themselves. I really feel like in my work, I want people to connect to the divine, the Akasha, whatever it is, whatever that system is themselves and trust in that connection and understand that, you know, this dimensional work is not like I have to sit down and meditate and do this, but we can pull this energy into our waking lives and feel the support. You know, part of like my own path is like living through tons of abuse and trauma. And what I found is like the Akasha has been with me this whole time. My spiritual ecosystem is that living with me and me living with that. And I don't necessarily want to dismantle readership because I think it's like having a friend, right? Sometimes you just need an outside perspective. And that's really helpful. Just the same way as like you're talking to a friend at brunch and you're like, should I text him back? It's the same thing, right? Not to be like dumbed down, like microcosmic and macrocosmic, but that's what it is, right? But I agree in that if we look at these things that we want to fix about ourselves and we're like, okay, I'm going to take this energy course, this Akasha class, this whatever, to like maybe get some validation somewhere, which is a completely human thing to do. Why don't you get that validation from yourself first? Why don't you recognize like this is just a part of you? You know, we can't evolve our perception, but we can't change what has happened.
Yeah.
And I think once you start to trust it, and the Akasha will guide you to seeing a completely different perspective in which love is hidden in those like corners. And I think both of us are going through some tender stuff in this, like Pisces season was rough on me. I think Pisces season was pretty rough on you. And, you know, I had to look at an issue over again, and I never saw so much love in something that was so extremely painful for me in my life. But I accredit that to being able to see things through an Akashic lens through my work that I do in my waking life. And I think that gives you so much more like space and like a sigh, and you don't have to carry that weight. So that was a long way of saying it, but I think that, you know, if you can't look to any practice to save you, to fix you, to make a better you, you are you. Who do you want to become? How do you become more you? That's what we want to look at. And trusting yourself, trusting your thoughts or your choices. Like, I love telling people there are no wrong choices. And for some reason, people love to ask that question. Like, I think we got one question that was like, what if the Akasha guided you to the wrong thing? They're not guiding you to the wrong thing. It's perspective. It's opportunity. You know, it guides you eventually to the right thing. Not in this work and in anything spiritual, it's not like daisies and roses and butterflies and sunshine all the time.
The point isn't to avoid discomfort.
Right. And so that's clearly spiritual bypassing. And in terms of people that like, I've definitely seen people take a class and have decided to teach a class on it. And I think that is such dog shit. It really grinds my gears. Cause who the fuck are you? There are definitely people that love to create certifications. There are people that love to like collect certifications. Like you can't take one class and know everything. And maybe I'm saying this from the point of view of somebody who needs to read 10 books on something and practice it on her own before she figures it out. But like, there has to be, you want to talk about cultural appropriation, like where's the honor? Where is the like the devotion? Where is the reverence in any practice? So you can come out here and talk shit about like cultural appropriation or whatever, but if you're somebody who's taken one class and has decided to teach it for an exchange in money, who the fuck are you?
It's
Aries season, goddamn.
It's really, it's, I mean, people are, this is the plane of free will. People can do what they're going to do. But man, it reminds me of like when Pinocchio goes to whatever that like island where like he gets tricked, and it's like there's going to be people like come this way, come this way, and they're going to spin really good tales about what you can get if you come with them. And we have to be so discerning and so listening to our resonant path. And because there's no bad choices, you might opt to work with a teacher like that. And maybe totally. The point isn't that, maybe the reason you went with that teacher wasn't because you're going to become a great Akashic teacher. Maybe they can't even offer that. Maybe it was to learn about your own agency. You had to go through a experience where, you know, like, so there are no wrong choices. But yeah, I you know, as someone who, like, I'm critical of certifications. I'm also in a PhD program, which is like a certification, but certifications are colonial. But what I'm talking about is like study and practice and praxis. And, you know, it's taken me 8 years to even, you know, because I've been solicited by students and clients before to, can you mentor me? Can I work with you long time? Do you take on students? And I've always been like, no. And I started the Akashic Study Hall last year or the year before or something, because people were asking this. And I was like, well, how about we just do this once a month and you just practice? I'll give you some questions. We could do it together. We can answer these questions in the Akasha, and then you can share your answers with each other, and we can do a community kind of thing. And that was really the seed of the mentorship. But it took me 8 years to even trust myself that I would not be causing, potentially and inadvertently causing, maybe causing harm to people by being their teacher in this. Like, who the hell am I? It took me that long. So I certainly revere a learned and studied person with such a intimate practice and such a delicate, like a, not delicate, but yeah, I guess intimate, because it is to really do the work in this field that I revere, that I love, is to truly face the things about you that you've run from your whole life, whether they cause you pain or shame or whatever. And that is such delicate work. That's such fragile, tender work that, like, I just didn't even trust myself. So I need somebody who I can trust to hold that for me. And then the other thing that you were saying about developing an Akashic lens or perspective, that's the whole point of, so the invocation, when I was given the invocation, they were like, this invocation's for everyone. Through regular use of this invocation, the user will experience an attunement in their body, meaning that they will understand that they stop going out for the Akashic records, and they understand that the consciousness is, it's within, it's everywhere, but like they will feel it from within. And that, sure enough, had already happened to me. But I started seeing it more clearly with myself when I started using the invocation. But they're like, the invocation, when you go through this attunement, when you go through this practice, you learn that, like, it is, the consciousness is everywhere. The invocation is a set of words to trick the conscious mind into believing it did something. Like, oh, I opened the Akashic records by saying this thing. It's the key that opened the thing. But really, it's everywhere. And so by going through this attunement process, you develop a consciousness, a conscious awareness of this consciousness, so that, and I can feel it so distinctly. Like, I can feel when, like, when a conflict arises, I can feel myself respond to it akashically. I can sometimes feel myself be like, no, I don't want to do that. Here's the Leah response. I can feel the conflict or the tension between the two. Most often at this point in my life, I listen to that Akashic consciousness. I stop being so defiant or oppositional to it. But that to me is an indication of that merging that I hope my students can get to, where they have this resource all the time at any moment in their life, that they're a part of it.
I think that I just want to clarify, when I was yelling about like cultural appropriation, ultimately I think a lot of that is like the lack of reverence and the lack of respect and the lack of responsibility, you know, to a practice. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are just very drawn to certain practices but are afraid of it. But I think if there's a level of tact that you use, then, you know, there's always going to be a way, because spiritual practices connect to something in you, whether it's past, present, whatever, you know? And I think that when people just like take something and run with it, that's a grab. That's a, you know, that's a cash and grab. That's not, that's lacking. And I think when you lack in intellect, but when you lack in, what's the word I'm looking for? Integrity. There is going to be something lacking in your connection as well. And so like, how much can you actually teach, you know? I feel that like as a really young girl who was abandoned, who was alone, who moved a lot and never was able to make friends, that field of consciousness that was always around me, that was talking to me, gave me a sense of support. And so all I could do my whole life has been set to practice and trust whatever I'm being told, for the most part. Like there's discernment where I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. But
yeah,
for the most part, like there has always been a loving hand on me. And I got to a point where like, you know, even in my adult life, if we were like out of money, I would just be like, something will fall through. I'm not worried about it. Yeah. And it always worked, because that consciousness is here to support us in this life as well. Yeah. And I think that that's ultimately the goal in seeing that and being able to like dissolve that veil or separation without completely forcing that and like losing your mind over like what is real and what is not is the point. I mean I'm saying the same thing you're saying, but I think that that's really important. So and so like that prayer is your training wheels, I feel. And however you access it, whether it's a prayer, whether it's a sound bath, whatever, I think those training wheels put you on a path that is protected from yourself, protected from, you know, the human intellect, and connects you to something that is unbound.
And like when I, the importance of overlaying decoloniality and ontology onto that is like, we can then start to articulate where we have been bound by like social programming, by historical programming. Totally. And yeah, the records have actually assisted me in my decolonial education, because it is limitless and because I had the courage to trust it and ask for things outside of the show me another way. What is outside of the colonial imagination? It's been a resource for me, and it's been a resource for me when you study decoloniality, when you study ontology. Many people have this experience, and my living system students are having this experience where like you feel reality become unstable. You're like, the thing that I thought was true, the one world that we lived in, is actually not the only world that exists. And I feel my identity dissolving. I don't know what is real. I'm having turmoil in my relationships. I suddenly don't want to work at my job anymore. And so for me, having gone through that, the Akasha, and being a practitioner of this, was a support to come back and ground in like this understanding of unconditional love. I mean, unconditional love, they've even said to me, is like a stupid word, because love by definition has no conditions available to, you can't put a condition on it. But like coming back to feeling just, oh wow, I'm known and I am loved exactly as I am, and I can let things dissolve, and I'm not going to lose myself. Is it, so we even offer in living systems, Helen has taught the students, she teaches the students how to develop their own pathway to support them just through that class.
Why don't we get to some questions?
Okay. Yeah, we have some good ones. Should we do three?
Yeah, we're going to do three this time around. And so with that being said, even in the second round of questions, we got a lot of questions. And so I think this would be a good time to segue into the fact that Leah and I created a Patreon.
Sophia created a Patreon. I just get to ride the coattails of said Patreon.
No, you don't. You want to talk about like organization and systems? I don't like to follow rules, but I like to set them.
Yeah, I was like, if we are on that island of Lost Boys or whatever in Pinocchio, Sophia owns the bar and I'm the guy outside like, come on, come on, over here, over here.
So we have a Patreon. So obviously we want to make sure that these episodes are digestible. And so we're going to be limited to how much we can answer. But
yeah,
if you send in a question, we can totally answer it on Patreon. So every episode that we have leftovers, we will record and answer your questions.
Yeah.
You will also get quarterly live Q&As with us. So you get to hang out with us. But we really want to... Creating community is really important to us, and for like I feel like two kind of misfits, it's always like such a great space to meet other people that at least have something in common with you. We can't promise you're going to make friends, but we can promise that we'll be there, and there are people that are probably interested in the same things that you are in. So for like the same price as like, I don't know, eggs at this point, $5. No, you're in LA. So less than eggs.
Yeah. Eggs are like $8 here.
Okay. So $5 a month. You can get quarterly hangouts with us. We'll answer these questions. You know, we might like offer some stuff down the road, things like merch or whatever, but this is kind of a start off point to at least answer your questions, at least get a community started. And if you join, you get one of these really cool stickers.
Yay. I love it so much.
That are kind of big.
That's cool.
Yeah. So we'll send that to you. But anyhow, so let's get to the questions.
Okay.
And whatever's left over, we'll record for Patreon.
Okay, cool. So since we just talked about our practice, I think this question, this first question is really good. What is your least favorite thing about being an Akashic practitioner? I love that.
Being grouped with a bunch of bozos.
Say more. Like, tell me what you mean.
Well, I think in these two episodes, we've talked so much about how expansive the Akasha is. I really don't like calling it the records because I think that that's only one piece of the Akasha. And I think that the Akashic Records has really become a catch-all for people that are intuitive or psychic. And so I'm not trying to be whatever, but whatever, you're listening to my podcast. So, but I feel that there are a lot of people out there that are practitioners or are teachers or are whatever, and they are really not in the Akasha. And it, not to be like Dr. Linda Howe about it, but I don't know if they are that practice or experienced in it. Like, it's kind of like, I don't know, are we reading the same book? Probably not.
kind of
vibe. Yeah. So I really don't like that. And maybe that's my own work, right? But I feel that I see it in personalities. Like, I feel like people that are unwilling to go to the unknown, unwilling to be expansive, unwilling to open themselves up, maybe even to conflict or confrontation, I feel like those are probably not Akashic people, because I feel that when you are there, as much as it's pure love, it brings you back into a reality that is pure chaos, and you're gonna have to confront them some things if you are devoted to this work.
I totally agree with that. I feel that with a lot of stuff, like with decoloniality or decolonizing, you see that word everywhere. And I'm always like, you don't mean what I mean. I don't know what you mean, but that is not.
One of my favorite things is screenshooting and sending it to you and being like, I don't know much about decoloniality, but what do you think? Just to set you off.
Oh man, maybe if you join Patreon, we'll send you like little screenshots of our texts between each other. Yeah, that's really hard because often the loud voices that might be wrong voices are the ones that get the most attention.
Yep.
And then so for me, this is my work, triggers me like, what do more people like what I have to say? And a lot of people have been like, because they don't fucking understand you, Leah. Like, you talk about complex things. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But it's because I'm talking about what I have studied and what it is. And it isn't, you know, like, especially like in the world of social media spirituality, people want to hear the Akashic Records say stuff like, you know, you are unconditionally loved. And, you know, and, which, yeah, okay, great, that's true. Or like, you know, you have to be gentle with yourself, or like, you know, just the platitudes of spirituality.
Grace.
Yeah, exactly. Gratitude. Like, people want to hear the thing. They're, it is not a place for consuming complex openings about your trauma or about the world. It is for some people, and I have very cool, committed followers and clients and students that found me through what I post. But most people want to just drink their coffee and see something that makes them feel good real quick, and also something that doesn't conflict with what they already know. And so with the Akasha and with other Akashic practitioners and with decolonial quotes around that, people, they're often not sharing what I would share. They're not in the world that I'm in. And they're not, I would say with the Akasha, it's like, yeah, you're not wrong. But like, going back to the driving the car analogy, like, you're driving like a Maserati on a like closed street at 15 miles an hour. That's not what that car is designed to do.
Right.
But you can do that. That's fine. Do that. I'm here to like go 120 on an open road. So that's frustrating. I would say the other thing that is frustrating for me is as a practitioner for pay, I did not know how to have boundaries at first with clients. And so this is just my path. It doesn't have to do with Akashicness. It has to do with being a practitioner. That was very tricky for me, to not confuse friendship for friendliness, and learn how to be a friendly practitioner that is not a friend. And it isn't to say that I haven't made friends with my clients and students, but that I have observed and experienced people. I mean, who are talking to me as if I am their friend, but it absolutely does not go both ways. They're not there for me. They're tapping into me when I am, so that I can be there for them outside of the confines of a session that they have paid for.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say like that's probably a similar route, like the practice of reading people. I think what people, the expectations of what people want to hear, and then fight on when they do hear it or whatever, you know. A lot of the times, like, I get clients that are like, I know your books are closed, who should read me? And I give those recommendations, but there are also practitioners that give it in a very similar manner. But I really didn't like that set of expectations, like, tell me my future, tell me what I need to know. Ultimately, you already know the answer, so why are you asking me? Like, I would tell you that as a friend without tapping in. And so it kind of got draining, and that demand to me was exhausting because it didn't align with my work in the Akasha. I think my work in the Akasha is a lot bigger than that. And I'm not saying I'm a bigger person than that. It's just like, there are millions of readers out there. You can go find them. I just think that there's something more that I want to do. And so even though I didn't like that, I'm actively now, partially being forced, but, you know, trying to change that. And that's why I closed my books, because I think that those boundaries of tapping into me when you need something. Or, you know, even now when my books are closed, there's definitely people that are like, hey, I wanted to talk to you about this, but I know you're not around. And it's like, okay, girl, well, you know, I'm not around. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. I love my clients, and I know that they are, and a lot of them I have developed relationships with, but I just think there's more to what I can offer the world or my audience than readings. And so I'm actively trying to change that. And I think that that is some work that I did in the Akasha of like, okay, you're going to let go of this money. What are we going to do? And I had to actively be like, well, I trust that things will pick up or something will happen and I'll be in a place where I can like reconfigure my work. Yeah. So what I say is like in confrontation, it's not necessarily person to person, but sometimes you're just confronting your own finances. Sometimes you're confronting things that are hard, decisions that are hard. Like I've got a family that I got to take care of, but I have to do, I have to confront certain things to make sure I'm aligning myself with what's true to me. And that is a direct correlation to my work in the Akasha.
Yeah.
And so when I see other people not doing that and just like cranking out an exchange or cranking out whatever, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. Like, how do I separate myself from the masses?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
So
should we do another one?
Next question. Yeah.
Okay. I love this question. So they're asking this of us as an Akashic reader and as the Akasha of the Akasha, how do I meet my need for companionship without relying on another person? That's a beautiful, that's a very Akashic question too. Like to ask an open-ended soul level question rather than like, when will I find my next partner? You know, like that's a beautiful question.
Yeah. I think with that, you know, this is where I really feel like I personify that like aliens guy. It's like, well, what is your definition of companionship?
Yeah.
What is your need? What do you think your needs are? What are your wants? Is that okay to talk about? Let's talk about desires. What do you need? What, you know, we had a conversation about finances, and what we talked about was, it's ultimately not about the finances. It's about the need at the end of the finances.
Right. Yeah.
And so I don't think this is necessarily a question about companionship. Yeah. I think it's the need.
What does companionship do for you?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What does it do for you? Right. Yeah. And so with finances, it pays your bills. It, you know, keeps your lights on. It gives you pocket money to go to Target or whatever. Yeah. So same thing with the companionship.
Yeah.
And I think that, I think it's really cool that they didn't connect the companionship to partner, but can you be a companion not only to another sentient being, any sentient being, but like, how can you be a better companion to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I love this question because I can feel like a longing underneath it. I can feel the emotion underneath that. And I've been there. I resonate with this question. It almost is like this person is maybe, I don't know, maybe given up or surrendered to like, maybe I won't find a person, but I still want to meet this need. And to me, that's like such an exploration. I have such a respect for that agency of that person. Mm-hmm. One of the things the record said to me, and I made a post about this, was the most alive you can feel is being in love. And basically what they're saying is, you know, because I had so many readings, I guess, at that time where people are like, you know, like, how do I, the questions were like around like, how do I know I'm on my right path? How do I know I'm doing the right thing? How do I know I'm supposed to be here? And the records equated that to like the feeling of being alive. And you know that you're alive when you can feel like you're in love with everything around you, whether it's people or place or animals or plants or whatever. And the records are actually guiding me toward like this time next year, I'm gonna be like, I think just like a dating and sex coach. That's what it feels like is coming. I don't want to, but talking about developing a falling in love orientation toward life. That, you know, in the colonial world, we think of falling in love as like an event that happens to us and we're passive and we don't have agency. And it's like, you know, we're so weak when we fall in love and it's outside of our choice. And the records are like, what if actually you could see it as a lens? And when you go out into the world, you are able, and it takes a lot of like ontological shifting or perspective shifting about yourself and about the world to like see through to the heart of the thing and find its charm there. Like, you know, oh, this tree who's, you know, in my front yard, whose roots are always, they're growing through the sidewalk and I always trip on them when I'm walking to my car. Actually, I've fallen in love with the world. And so now I see like the agency and the seeking that this tree is doing to be free and to be unfettered by the cement. And I see life and I just love this tree for having busted through the concrete instead of, what an annoying thing about this tree. We should have it removed. I don't know how that question answers this question, except for that that orientation to me brings about relationality. It brings about a feeling of connection. And for me, like, even if I haven't met a new person or I, you know, nothing maybe has changed in my actual life, my material life, that orientation makes me feel so accompanied, so in relationship, so accompanied, I guess. I was gonna say a companionship. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think one of my favorite quotes is in the book, The Unbearable Lightness of Being.
Lightness of Being, yeah.
And he talks about, the one guy talks about how he's not attracted to like every beautiful woman. He's right. attracted about the thing that makes them tick.
Yeah.
And I've always loved that quote.
Yeah.
So it's really about like the things that make somebody tick, or the things that make this practice tick, or the ritual that you have tick, or, you know, your morning coffee, you know, it's those little things, the minutiae, the nuances that you start to fall in love with. And so when I, you know, circumambulate to like, how can you be a better companion from yourself? Think about like your best friendships, like, it's never like, I like the way this person does X, Y, Z. It's always like, I like the way this person laughs, or like, this person always knows, has the right answer to like this thing, or, you know, it's like the little things. So like, how can you be a better companion with yourself? Because I think that what that does is that is how you trigger shifting that reality.
Yeah.
Right. Like what I, for somebody who's been like abandoned and misplaced and moved and stuff a lot, took me a really long time to like be a better companion to myself. And then I find myself sometimes being like, yo, I'm such a badass. Like when I like throw this kind of shade at people and get the whole like room to shift, that is so cool. Like, you know, sometimes it's just loving little things about yourself that maybe other people find annoying, but like, that's the thing that makes you tick.
Yeah.
So I think that's like a small way to start those shifts. And I think the more you fall in love with yourself, the more you have that agency, which clearly in that question, you've stepped into it, right? So you've already started this whole process.
Yeah.
The more you do that, things will start to gravitate towards you because you will see them clearer, or because you'll start to notice the nuances. And I think that that will change everything for you in terms of companionship, relationship, being in relationship, and et cetera.
Yeah. And we missed a key part of this, is relying on another. And I think there's like two perspectives on relying. There's like this colonial individualistic reliance, where like, that's a bad thing. I don't want to rely on anyone. I'm an individual. I need my freedom, my independence, my autonomy. But then there's like another ontology, a relational ontology, where like reliance is like proportion. It's like, it's inherent in connection, that like, I rely on you as you rely on me. And that's the nature of who we are together, or who I am with in community. Like, and so like, I hope that we can have perspective shifts away from relying is not, I mean, like being very aware of like, am I yielding my power to this person? And that's what relying is.
Yeah.
Or am I entrusting this person with my safety and they are entrusting me with their safety? And it's a, there's reciprocity here. Is it an interdependent instead of codependent? And yeah, so I think there's a lot of possibility there with that question. And I actually like have fallen in love with this person just for having asked it that way. I love that. Do we have time for one more or should we call it? What do you feel
Let's
like?
Let's do one more and then we'll call it.
Okay, let me choose one that is not going to be really crazy. They're all really intense questions.
We're intense people.
I know, but I feel like intense meaning...
No, I'm kidding.
Like,
layered.
Okay. Well, this person, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. What are the best ways to begin relating to or opening the records with no experience? I think get the Linda Howe book and read the prayer. Like, try that. It's so clear. It's so easy to follow. You can even just, I mean, I don't, again, with the keys in the car, you can just Google the PDF of it. It's free online. You can just try it. I recommend taking a class, studying with somebody, reading the book, doing something to like make your knowledge of this practice robust. But like for me, part of the reason why this practice hooked me was because the pathway prayer process was so easy. It was just so accessible.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my recommendation.
I would recommend having sitting down with yourself and having a really honest conversation about whether or not you trust your intuition. Because I think that regardless of grabbing that book or doing the prayer or whatever, if you don't trust yourself, you're not going to trust what comes through, even if it hits you in the face.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of practitioners out there that struggle with trusting themselves. So I think that, look, if you feel like confident in your intuition, and none of us are 100% confident in our intuition.
Yeah.
So let's get that out of the way. But hey, do you like read the signs and you're like, I'm going to go with my gut. Like, okay, then you might be ready to like test it out. If you are constantly questioning everything around you, start with that practice first.
Yeah.
Like start little things like trusting. And I would say like little ways you can do that is like, say you're somebody who's like, I don't care where we go. When your group asks, decide, say, hey, why don't we do this?
Yeah.
And see what happens. Taking those little real steps in life builds you inside too.
Yeah.
So,
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So I would say that that's kind of the first, because if you don't trust yourself and you go into the practice, you're going to be questioning everything that happens, and it's just going to fall flat. So
your experience will only be as robust as you trust, as you're able to trust. Like it's
as
not
robust as you trust.
Exactly. You can't jump over the trust. You can't.
No. So yeah, I think that's, you know, just the reality of it. If you feel like pretty good about it, and again, like it's never going to be perfect. Yeah. Dr. Linda Howe's books are great. This book, Opening the Akashic Records by Maureen J. St. Germain, is great. You can just go online, get into a meditative state and open the records through Linda's prayer, I think, is online for free too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you want to try it that way, just do it that way. See what happens. See what, you know.
Or like look for books of like how to access the Akashic Records online. And if one sticks out to you, resonates, go with that teacher. Try it. Just try different things.
Try different things.
Yeah.
But check your own intuition first before you jump in.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to jump into the sea off a boat and not know how to swim. Though
for
I have done that.
Oh, that'll be next episode.
All right, guys. So that is it this time around for the Akashic Records. I really liked this episode. I think it was a good little bookend to it.
Yeah.
Again, if you sent in questions, check Patreon. We are going to answer the rest of those questions on there. And link will be in my bio. And $5 a month. Anything else? You got
I don't
anything?
think so.
All right, cool.
That's it. Yeah,
What are we
that's
going to
good.
talk about next time?
I don't know. When are we going to talk about evil? I don't know. I don't actually know. I need to look in my notes. We had some other topics. But yeah. And also, I would like to ask for topics that people want us to talk about in general.
Yeah. Why don't we do that? We're gonna surf the web for some topics. So,
Yeah.
send them our way. And Lee and I will chat, and we will see you guys next time.
Yeah.
So, thanks,
Thank
everybody.
you.